to talk to all of you about today a little bit, share a little bit of the devotional here with you about this. So, Epiphany is actually every January 6th. It's 12 days after Christmas. And so Friday is actually Epiphany, but we're going to talk about Epiphany this morning. And I want to start by sharing, this is my version of the children's moment this morning. So we're going to share a little bit about a book called The Fourth Wise Men. I know I've shared with you all before that I love children's books. I love the little lessons they teach about life in really small, simple ways, and I love the illustrations, and so this is one of my very favorite Christmas books. I've shared this in other children's moments and with my kids. This, in fact, was a gift to one of the kids. So The Fourth Wise Man, I like to think of it as a Midrash story. So a Midrash story is, in the Jewish tradition, it's stories that their priests and their scribes created in order to explain certain things that are not explained in the Bible. So it's kind of, they're kind of commentary, but sometimes they're done in a story fashion. So I like to think of this as kind of a commentary, or I'm sorry, kind of a midrash. The fourth wise man was a wise man just like the other three that we already know, and he was their friend. They all noticed the star together, and they headed out to travel to meet Jesus in the beginning. And but this one, Artaban was his name, he gets kind of waylaid along the way. And so what happens is they see the star, they decide to start out, they're going to meet at a designated point and begin their journey, and he doesn't make it to the designated point on time. And he doesn't make it to the point on time because he stops to help an old man who is sick on the roadside. And before starting out, he sells his house. And with that money, the proceeds, he buys a sapphire, a ruby, and a pearl. And he takes his best horse out of the stable. And he starts on his journey. But when he meets this sick man, he takes the sick man back to the nearest city, I forget which city that was, and he sells that sapphire in order to get money to pay for the care of this man. So it's kind of like the Samaritan story. Then he goes ahead and continues his journey, but he misses the other three wise men. They go ahead and travel without him. And he travels for quite some time. He gets to Bethlehem too late. By the time he gets there, the star is gone. The three wise men have moved on, and the family has fled to Egypt. So he begins his journey, and he searches for the next 33 years. He searches. And the years passed, and Artaban traveled on, always searching in the poorest places for the family from Bethlehem. He passed through towns where people were crying with hunger. He passed through cities where they were dying of plague. And though he found no king of kings to worship, he found many people to help. Whenever he went, he fed the hungry, he clothed the naked, he healed the sick, and he visited those in prison. And his years went by more swiftly than a weaver's shuttle that darts back and forth through the loom while the web grows and the invisible pattern is completed. From time to time, he would stop and take out his pearl, the last of his gifts, and as he gazed upon it, he would wonder whether he would ever meet the King of Kings.
Can you show the picture? And hold it down a little bit.
What's that supposed to be a picture of?
It's just a picture of Artaban traveling on his journey in search of Jesus, the King of Kings. And yeah, this isn't the best picture to show.
Maybe we can give people a chance to flip through the book.
Yeah, I can pass it around here in just a second. I'll pass it around and you can take a look at it. So I'm going to skip over some things. So he's given, at this point, he's given away the sapphire, he's given away the ruby, and he has only left the pearl. And he arrives in Jerusalem, and this is his last stop. He's going to make this the last ditch effort to find the King of Kings. And as he enters into the city, coming towards him is a soldier carrying a young girl, And he's like not carrying her, he's dragging her, he's roughly handling her, and she's been sold into slavery by her parents who have debt that they can't pay. And she recognizes that this Artaban has money and that he is someone that she, her father, would probably know. And so she begs him. She says, please save me, please help me. And Artaban looks on the girl and trembles. And for a third time, he has to choose between keeping his jewel as a gift for the King of Kings or surrendering it to save a fellow human being. Yet he knew that to rescue this hopeless girl would be a true deed of love. Artaban looked for his priceless pearl from his pouch and placed it in the girl's hand. Here's your ransom, daughter. It is the last of the treasures I was keeping for the King of Kings, who is now to be crucified. And as he spoke, the sky grew black and tremors ran through the street, which heaved like someone in pain. Houses rocked, stones fell, and crashed to the street. Dust clouds filled the air, and soldiers fled in terror, reeling like drunken men. And Artaban and the girl took refuge beside the wall of the guardhouse. So this is Artaban. This picture is a little bit easier to see. Let's see if I can get this down here. This is Artaban. This is the girl he's rescuing. And this is, of course, Calvary.
And can you switch it back real quick? There, and then pop it on the show.
The earth gave one final shudder, and a heavy tile loosened from the roof and fell and struck Artaban on the temple. As the girl bent over him, fearing that the old man was dead, there came a voice through the darkness, very small and still, like music sounding from a distance, and the voice said, peace be with you, Artaban. When I was hungry, you gave me food. When I was naked, you clothed me. When I was in distress, you comforted me. As often as you did these things for the least of my children, you did them for me. A calm radiance lit up Artaban's face, and at long last, a sigh of relief left his lips. His journey had ended. At last, he had found the king. This is Artaban being comforted by the young girl. So I know the story is a fictional account. I know it's not actually what's in the Bible about the visits from the three wise men. But I do think that the story helps us to understand maybe a little bit more about why the visit from the three kings, the three wise men, was so important. On Christmas, in the Eastern Christian tradition, we celebrate the arrival of the divine in the baby Emmanuel. But on Epiphany, we celebrate the revelation to the world that God has arrived in the person of Jesus of Nazareth. We celebrate the arrival of God's holy light in a broken world that has been disconnected from its creator. The wise men and their visits are important for a couple of reasons. One, they witness the birth of Jesus, and they honor the one who is born the king and who will change the world. But they offer him hospitality as well. They become a blessing to Jesus and Mary and Joseph. They are Mary's baby shower. They serve as the Bethlehem's welcome wagon. And in the end, they protect the family by giving them just enough time to escape. The hospitality they offer comes in their physical presence, welcoming Jesus into the world, but it also comes in the gift of gold, myrrh, and frankincense. Over the centuries, there's a great deal of speculation about the symbolism of these gifts and around the mystery of the three wise men. No one knows for sure whether they really did give these gifts or not. They don't know for sure whether Matthew may have used these as a way of foreshadowing what was to happen in Jesus' life. We don't know if there was any meaning that the wise men were aware of in the gift giving. But there is symbolism that has been attached to it. And in the gold, people assume that the gold was used to finance the flight to Egypt and maybe even get the family started in their new life. The frankincense was an incense that was burned for several reasons, but was used in the embalming of dead bodies in Egypt. And the myrrh was used as an incense to anoint people, as well as just an incense in the temples. So there's a lot of symbolism around those gifts. They were very important gifts at that time. They were very expensive gifts to be received at that time. And so that's how many people think that they might have been used. But whatever the gifts were, they remind us that of the hospitality of the wise men and the idea of giving to others. It also reminds us of the transition as God transitions into becoming both divine and flesh, ready to serve his own creation. So on Epiphany, we celebrate all of this by remembering the light that enters into the darkness and how a baby was made welcome. So what does it mean for us to remember Epiphany in our lives each day? What Jesus teaches us all throughout his life, or all throughout his ministry, that there is no separation between God and humans, or between humans and humans. But I love this particular passage that I'm going to read for you. It's written by Cynthia, and I'm gonna demolish her name. I know it, but it's Virgalt. She's a very well-known spiritual writer, and this was offered up this past week in devotionals sent out by the Center for Action and Contemplation, which Richard Rohr has headed up. And so in her book, The Wisdom Jesus, Transforming the Heart and Mind, she writes this: no separation between human and human is an equally powerful notion and equally challenging. One of the most familiar of Jesus' teachings is love your neighbor as yourself, which is Mark 12:31 and Matthew 22:39. But we almost always hear it wrong. We hear love your neighbor as much as yourself. And if you listen closely to Jesus' teachings, however, there is no as much as yourself. If you listen closely, it's just love your neighbor as yourself, as a continuation of your very own being. It's a complete seeing that your neighbor is you. There are not two individuals out there, one seeking to better herself at the price of the other or to extend charity to the other. There are simply two selves of one great life. Each of them is equally precious and necessary. And as these two selves flow into one another, experiencing that one life from the inside, they discover that laying down one's life for another, which is John 15:13, is not a loss of oneself, but a vast expansion of it. Because the invisible reality of love is the only true self. So I think of this, as I've already said, as a midrash, which helps us to focus on the very understanding of our lives being expanded by the ones we take time to recognize, the divine within and love. It shows us that while the wise men did not die for Jesus, they understood what it meant to recognize the good and the holy in others. Our lives are enriched by it, and in fact, our lives are expanded by it. So how do we take the wisdom of the three wise men and lead it to us becoming more welcoming, more hospitable in 2023? How do we allow our lives to be expanded by the divine holiness that lives within others? I thought of a couple of ways we might do that. One is that when you are contributing, as so many of you do so generously, to our weekly donations, the mission work that we get involved with, that we take the time to pray for those people, which we've been doing together, and that we consider who those donations go to and what this might mean for them in their lives, and not only what our work means for them, but what it is that they're experiencing, what it is that they're going through at that moment. Another way is when we are talking about the people that we are asking prayers for each week as we pray for the people, that we take a moment to listen to their stories. Almost always when we offer up our stories, our requests for prayer, we don't just say, hey, pray for John. We say, hey, John, who used to go to church here, or John, who is my brother, or John, who is my friend. This is happening in their lives, so listen to their stories. Think about what that means for them, and again, let those stories enter into your heart, and let them connect you with them, even if you don't know them, even if you've never met them and never will. Let them connect you with those people. And finally, remember that God doesn't ask us to do everything for everyone. He simply asks that we do what we can, where we can, when we can. So when we meet one another, when we meet new people as we walk through our neighborhoods or go to the grocery store, when we encounter friends that we haven't seen for a while, when we hear about new people, we listen to them, we talk to them, we look for what's good in them, and know and recognize that is God living within them and dwelling within them, and that we become hospitable to that. We welcome that into our lives, and we let it make our lives richer and more full and expand our lives. So, one of the things I wanted to do, there's a little craft that will help us kind of remember this, and so I wanted to share that with you. I'm going to hand out, I think I have enough here for everybody to do one, just instead of doing one per household, I think everybody can do one themselves. I know you can't read that from here, but I'm going to hand out a couple of things here, but it says 20 plus C plus M plus B plus 23, and then it says down below it, God bless this house. So I'm going to see that here. So let me explain to you what that means. So the first 20 is for the year 2023. So we're going to put 20 plus C, which stands for Casper, plus M, which stands for Melchior, plus B, which stands for Balthazar, plus 23, which is the last two digits of the year. And then, not only does the C, M, and B stand for the names of the wise men, but it also stands for the Roman statement, the Roman statement of blessing, I guess. Christus Mansionium Benedictat. I hope I said that right. I never took Latin, so I probably butchered that all up too, but you get the meaning. That means, translated, that means bless this house. And so what I want you to do is to take one of these. I'm going to give you some little white chalk markers so that you can write on it. I only have 8 markers, so share them as we pass them around. And I'm going to give you a little ribbon to tie on the end of it. You can take this home and hang it wherever you want, on a door handle, on a cabinet handle. You can hang it on your tree if you want. Wherever you want to hang this, and let it be a reminder and ask God to bless your house so that this house is a blessing to others, but also that there is a blessing in knowing others and loving others and caring for others. And just let it remind you all year long of that hospitality and what it means. So this is a tradition. I think it's probably practiced in the Catholic Church just a little bit more than it is in the Protestant Church, but it's catching on, and a lot of Protestant churches are doing it as well. Usually what they do is take chalk and mark in the door frame of your front door. So if you really think this is a great idea, go home and mark it on your front door too. But most of us don't want to have chalk mark on our door frame. So we're just going to put it on this little ornament here. So I'm going to start to hand these out. I'm going to send a few down this way. And so we're going to take one and pass it on. And then I'll take some over here on this side and pass it on too. Just take one of those little black things out, one of these little. All right, I'll be out here. Yeah, all right, there we go. Maybe. Yeah, there we go.